views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
And I would say good afternoon to everybody that's listening. This is going to be an interesting show. I think most of you that listen to the show realize that we expose a lot of truth and talk about items that are significant to your life. But I've got to say, as this show starts, this is probably the most, for me, physically unusual show that I've done, because as this is taking place, I'm flat on my back. Sometimes experience is the best teacher, and sometimes we might take for granted our health. For example, in my case, I assumed 3 months ago that I was a reasonably healthy, in fact, fairly healthy, 57-year-old male. If you said, well, are you in good shape? I'd have said, well, you know, not bad for my age. But I have to say, I probably took health a bit for granted, considering today I am, again, laying down with a herniated disc and finding out what the experience of pain is like in life and how debilitating a physical condition can be, and the importance, and this is to me probably the significance of kind of where today's show goes, and the importance of putting health first in our life, in doing those simple things, those small things, those things that perhaps we take for granted, doing those things that keep us healthy and keep us alive and keep us active and keep us able to focus and to function. And so as I began to think about this particular program, it occurred to me that I have a dear friend up in New York, a fellow speaker, a person who is a nationally recognized speaker, author, and educator, and her focus is empowering women through movement. And I got to thinking about Rochelle Rice and the fact that although her focus is empowering women through movement, it occurred to me as I was thinking of a guest for our show that, well, Chuck, you need to move a little bit yourself. You need to quit thinking that exercise is hustling through airports, getting on planes, scurrying to the next engagement, and think about, what do you do on a daily basis that promotes health? So with that, I think we're going to have a great show today. Let me introduce Rochelle Rice. She is a former professional jazz dancer with a history of bulimia. And Rochelle embraces the health at every size approach after realizing that an inordinate amount of stress is put on the thinness of our society. Good gosh, we see that in advertisements and TV programs, and in people who are photographed and then photoshopped to fit that image that, Madison Avenue or Wall Street or whomever it may be these days wants to promote as what is the way to look. She believes all people have the right to a movement program that works for his or her body, and no one should be discriminated against when it comes to movement. Her focus is training people to move with grace and ease in the body they're in right now. And Rochelle, welcome to the show. And I'd like to say I would love today to be able to move with grace and ease. And that isn't something that's happening at this moment, but I'm thrilled to have you on the show to help talk with our audience about the importance of what you do. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chuck. And I think we will have you moving with some grace and ease by the end of the show.
Well, honey, I'm going to tell you, if you could have me moving with grace and ease, I would be one more happy camper, because at this point in time, with a sciatic nerve pinch because of a herniated disc, I have a real pain in the butt, and that is that's a literal truth. But, you know, both of us entered the speaking world, and it appears that both of us entered the speaking world from experience from our background, mine through bad choices and unethical choices, which leads me to talk today about the importance of choice and consequence and ethics. But let's talk about your background and what brought you into what you're doing today.
Yes, and thanks, Chuck. As you mentioned in the opening there, my history is a background. I've danced since the age of 3, so movement has always been a part of my life. But going into college, having an eating disorder and not really knowing back then what this bulimia was actually called at the time, it was all very quiet, very secretive. When I went out to San Francisco after college, I was working with a dance company there first, and I had on what they call a unitard, a one piece from head to toe that covers your whole body. And basically the director said to me, either lose the weight or lose the part. So I stopped eating, I dropped the weight, and I maintained my solo. And the minute the performance was over and the curtain came down, I was back in the full-blown eating disorder of bulimia. When I got to New York, those things started to level out a little bit. Obviously, a lot of work in therapy and movement and basic spiritual mental health. But the one really, really key thing that took me away, that brings me to today, is that we always suffer. There's a lot of people out there that suffer with, I'm not thin enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not enough. And we are absolutely more than enough and absolutely beautiful, exquisite, divine beings, as far as I'm concerned, all connected as one on this earth and with this beautiful heart that just needs to shine. So that's what brings me to today out of that chaotic blessing of the professional dance world.
Rochelle, let me ask you a question. When you first started, just get clear on one thing, because my wife would say the same, in that she also is someone who has recovered from bulimia. And I heard what you said, and I've heard what she said, and it resonates. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't thin enough. I wasn't something enough. Did that start for you before you pursued professional dance when you went to California, or was it something that was really kicked in because of the expectations of that profession and choice that you made at that time?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I would say it probably started around the age of 16. So I was already dancing growing up outside of Boston and grew up in mom's dancing school. I was doing performances in the local Boston Nutcracker. And so this experience of having to maintain a certain weight, especially when a woman goes through her developing years, is a real challenge. Even back then, and I'm talking, you know, mid to late 70s, there was a lot of pressure to have to maintain a certain weight for dance for me. So while we still see some of that today, on young people, in fact, it's probably worse than ever. I would say it wasn't necessarily the professional dance, but being in the dance world brought up a high level of it for me personally.
And I can see that. And I also, and maybe this is inaccurate, and you're the expert in this area, and I think it's something that certainly the audience would be interested in, but it seems to me that although you were in the dance world and there were certain expectations, and that might have been a contributing factor to, oh my gosh, I've got to maintain this certain weight. Mm-hmm. At the same time, today it seems like, it's almost like I see one of two extremes. It's either the extreme of peer pressure for the tweens and the teens and so forth to either be real thin and to meet these idealistic expectations that you see in the media, or the alternative to that seems to be people who are naturally overweight, and perhaps that's because of, you know, all that you hear about, you know, we have a sedentary lifestyle, we sit and play video games, and we don't necessarily eat the right things. So am I on the right track, or do we really have that kind of weird dichotomy, or where is it today?
We definitely have that, Chuck, more than ever, I would say. However, we're not looking, and we see this across a number of topics in the country and across the world today. We're not focusing enough on our commonalities, is what I like to say. We're all individuals that need to eat to sustain ourselves, and we need to move to keep the body in motion for health reasons. But we have to look more at what I say the commonalities as opposed to, well, you're super thin. What divides us or differentiates us? We're all human beings with the same internal organs, even. So what we're looking at is we're focusing more on the external as opposed to those things that we all have the same, which is the internal, which is all about internal organs, which I also love to talk about. So we're not looking at each other as people anymore. We're looking at each other as just physical beings that are defined by a particular size, weight, color, and any of these things that completely divides us. So that's I'm pretty passionate right about there. Where are we all common as opposed to why are we all so different?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. It's unfortunate, and I'm not sure what the immediate solution is, but it does seem that, at least from where we are, when I say where we are, we as Americans, we seem to be in this place of division instead of unity. And now I hear the music that says, gosh, we're coming to the first break. So I want to say to you, I'm talking with Rochelle Rice. She has a great new program called Breathe and Eat. It's a 6-week mindful eating program. And when we get back, we're going to talk with Rochelle Moore. She is the author of Real Fitness for Real Women and Size Sensitivity Training Programs and Environments. She is an expert in her area, and you'll want to stick with us because there's going to be some really incredible tips to help you. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, thanks for sticking with us. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. My guest is Rochelle Rice. She has appeared on Fox News, ABC, World News Tonight, and the CBS Early Show. Her movement program has been featured in the New York Times, the LA Times, Family Circle, and Fit Magazine. She is an accredited speaker of Toastmasters International. That's only one of 64 in the world. And Rochelle, as a nationally recognized speaker, author, and educator, empowers women through movement. And we spent the first part talking a little bit about, Rochelle, your background. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about what motivates behavior. You know, one of the things that strikes me is, and I talk about ethics a great deal, and that comes down to the question of what motivates your behavior. And our needs combined with our opportunities and what we can rationalize ultimately leads to the choices that we make. And so I'm going to take a guess, and I'm going to put this into the term that I can deal with. But going back to what you said, when you began as a dancer, before you became a professional dancer, you know, after school, well, what was my need? Well, my need was to be a certain size and to be able to move and to fit the part. The opportunity was, well, I could choose an eating disorder, not that it was conscious choice by any stretch of the imagination, but an eating disorder would help me accomplish that need or meet that need. And the rationalization was, well, if this is what it takes in order to accomplish the objective, well, I guess it's okay. It's quiet. Nobody knows. And so I guess I'd be interested to get your perspective on what motivates people's behavior, because as you said, we tend to look at the external and what differentiates us as opposed to the commonality of what connects us.
Perfect, my friend. One of the things that I like to really focus on is when you talk about people's needs, if I ask people, their body does, they feel the need to move, and usually it's about engaging in life again. There's an activity in life they want to do better. They want to either be able to be out socially more. They want to be able to play with their grandchildren, get down on the floor. Any of these types of things can be a motivator for the behavior change. But what I found is happening in my work is that the fitness industry in general is beating people externally. Okay, you have to get onto the treadmill and go and beat that kind of that pain, no gain kind of a feeling, which does not create a pleasurable experience within the person to continue this behavior. However,
yeah.
Right? So we're almost training like the reverse of what we want to see shift. Almost like if we keep beating on them, they're going to get it right. Well, what I find in my work is that if I spend the time on the education with regards to muscles, bones, and internal organs, which is directly taking the person from living in their head with all the should, I should, I should, down into their body and understanding anatomically, for example, what muscles and bones are required to climb stairs. What muscles and bones do you need to go bowling with? How do I make this function in my world? Immediately, the behavior is then more inspired because they understand how it's going to happen. The same is true for me when it comes to even on a food program. People say they want to lose weight and then, but have no sensation of where the stomach organ is anatomically located in the body, let alone how big it is or how much food it can truly hold. So this is the work that it just gets me so excited because once it's firmly rooted, once they have they can make that connection to their physical body on a very deep physical cellular level, this, to me, is what motivates the behavior.
You know, as I hear you say that, I have to say I connect with that in a completely different way today than if we had had this interview 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I have to say this, 3 months ago, I would probably have been mindless or in a mind sleep, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
I will have heard what you said, responded to it, but it wouldn't have connected because, you know, today, with due respect, I get up in the morning and I know I have muscles that I never knew existed mm-hmm. that contract, spasm and do other things and they're attempting to do what they think is necessary to protect my lower back. And it hits me, you're absolutely right. I have zero desire to say I'm going to go work out. People say I'm going to go work out and they go through this process and it's like they put themselves through pain and it's like for what? But if I can connect with, like you said, I want to be able to get on the floor and play with my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do things comfortably and not put my body at harm. That, to me, becomes now a motivator. I know at my age there are certain things I need to be doing to strengthen my body so that I don't have experiences like I have now. And that is a far more impactful motivator than just saying, oh, you should go do because. Sometimes I guess it takes the experience of doing without to learn that.
Exactly. And as you point out in the work that you do, you talk about no matter how strong the physical building, right, in this case the physical body, any person is still vulnerable to damage if it's not built on ethics, integrity, honesty, and accountability. So the
right.
things that you teach in your work are exactly able to bring over to the physical body as well. And I mean, it's ethics. We have to work with the body in a very ethical way. And not only that, work with health professionals that are ethical and holding what I call this health at every size paradigm, that you don't have to hit a certain weight. There has to be a sense of integrity that we're not beating on the body, but we're embracing the body as something to work with, not against. We have to be honest and say, was I moving today? You know, this body was meant to move. Was I moving today? Did I nourish the body in the way that feels best and works the best for me. And accountability, just keeping track of what's going on and not wait until we're in pain to then become aware of this beautiful physical body that takes us through our day. So I loved how we can sort of connect that over from the work that you do to the work that I do in the physical body. So,
well, and I have to say to you, I would be the first to admit, now knowing what I know, I would much rather not connect with the pain to bring myself to the awareness that I need to do something different. Although I have to say, I guess in honesty to me, apparently I am an experiential person, because it appears that significant experiences in life are the things that create the greatest inclination, desire, and action for me. Perhaps I need to refocus that a bit, because sometimes these are a bit on the extreme side. Rochelle, I do want to ask you a question, and this may be way off track, and if it is, bring me back. But you made a comment a little earlier, you know, for people to connect with the parts of their body, and you said, you know, the stomach and what it can hold. And it strikes me, I was talking with a really good friend of mine who had, and I'm not sure which it was, but I'm going to call it lap band surgery, to reduce the, I guess, the intake potential of her stomach, which obviously causes forces, just the simple force of nature, causes the person to eat less, consume less calories, and ultimately reduce a lot of weight. I think of that on one hand, and then I think of these crazy eating contests where somebody eats like 50 hot dogs, and think to myself, how in the world is that extreme possible? And I guess it is.
Well, let's look, for example, at the eating contest that you mentioned. For example, I think it's on Coney Island, the hot dog eating contest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Up in your neck of the woods.
Yes, absolutely. I can't even wrap my mind around this, but I think it's a hot spot for me with regards to eating disorders. So what I'm going to say is that group is way out on the fringe, where they're training the body in a completely different way that, I have to be honest with you, Chuck, I know nothing about, other than they're not even chewing. The food is going down whole. So I don't – how that food makes its way through the stomach organ and through 26 feet of intestines, I have no idea. And honestly, I don't even hang out in that part of this health world, let's say.
Right, I understand.
But let me come over, though. However, my scope of practice does include this lap band surgery. And what's happening, so on the physical level, we are cutting the actual stomach organ, or disfiguring or shifting or changing, you know, externally. We're changing this physical organ. But if the connection is still not being made to this organ, the behavior may not change. And what
right.
I mean by that is, if we still don't have a sensation of how much food the stomach organ can hold, the behavior will not change. What then happens is the person still takes in, doesn't have a sensation, and that food from a lap band person could either come out, from a lap band could be actually turned into regular bulimia, because the body is expelling it because we haven't honored what the amount is to go in. And let me just say that
right.
I couldn't even breathe talking about that, because I realize it's a really it's a hot topic, because I think that health and recovery from any of the eating disorders really comes into you having this key awareness around and respect for one's internal organs.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the topic, the thing that you hit on for me with that is, we can, I guess anybody, possibly can do something physical to change the circumstance, whether that's bulimia, anorexia, lap band surgery, whatever, without connecting to the overall, I'm at a loss for words, the overall connection of who we are and why we would want to make a change other than forcing that physical change. Now, we're coming up on a break again, and this is Rochelle Rice. She's my guest. She has a great program, Breathe and Eat, a 6-week mindful eating program, and she's got 6 lesson video guides on how to really change the lifestyle, because you want to, and because it makes sense, not necessarily purely from a physical perspective, because from a health perspective. So with that said, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. You want to stick around for our next segment. We're going to be talking with Rochelle. She's a nationally recognized speaker, author, and educator, empowering women through movement. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back with Straight Talk Radio. This is Chuck Gallagher, and my guest is Rochelle Rice. She is the author of Real Fitness for Real Women and Size Sensitivity Training, Programs and Environments. She earned her master's degree at NYU, specializing in her plus-size exercise program. Rochelle believes in movement, as do I. And also, she empowers women through movement. And she has a new program. It is Breathe and Eat. And you can find that at breatheandeat.com, BREATHEANDEAT.com, just as it sounds, as spelled, breatheandeat.com. It is a six-week mindful eating program. And it says here, with Rochelle as your guide, you will be able to make choices with less drama, less anxiety, and less worry with your meals. And I'm a firm believer in eating right. And I also know, Rochelle, both of us as speakers who are on the circuit and travel quite a bit, the more you travel, the more difficult sometimes it is to find that healthy way to eat. It's a bit more challenging on the road, but certainly not impossible. And I really appreciate you being on the show here as my guest. Tell us a little bit about your program. What brought you to this new program that you've instituted?
Great question, Chuck. This program actually was developed from one of the times I was running. You know, I run in between, as we all do, appointments, and I was standing literally on the platform waiting for the subway, when I say inhaling almonds, and started into a total coughing fit because I was literally inhaling the food in a rush. And it was right at that point that this program was, you know, created in my mind, and I said, this is what has to happen. In general, our schedules are so full, so hectic, so crazy that people are eating everywhere, public transportation, right, in the car. I mean, we are rarely sitting at a table anymore, it seems. And so this program was designed with the idea, again, going back to that anatomical perspective that I mentioned, of connecting to the physical body. Now, of course, there's an emotional component to binge eating or overeating or erratic eating. But just for the moment, and during this program, I'm asking people to put that aside for just a moment. It should and can be dealt with. But during this program, you're focusing specifically on the sensations, tracking the sensations during the mealtime to get a true reading on what is happening in the stomach organ and in the body as a whole during mealtime.
That, I have to say, it's a real interesting perspective, and I probably ought to go through the program myself, because my wife will tell you that we will sit down and have a meal together, and we enjoy the meal, but she is probably much more mindful of the process of eating than I am. I'm jokingly kidded her. I said, good gosh, You masticate a food to the point that there's nothing, and she's like, and you just put it in your mouth and swallow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an element of truth to it. I'm probably not quite that bad, but certainly much different than her. And the idea of being mindful of the experience is, I have to admit, probably a little foreign to me.
Well, let me see if I can tell you a little bit about the program and how it could match and work in your world. So, for example, as a speaker, you are on the road a lot, and I say to people that this program can work whether you're eating Doritos and Ben and Jerry's or salmon and kale. And what I mean by that is, let's just say we're on the road and we've got to eat some food that may be high salt, high fat content in an airport, for example. You still, no matter what's coming into the body, have a connection with the stomach organ.
Right.
So even if you were eating that, when you talk, as the program says, when you stop and breathe, take a breath, tune in and see what the body, the physical body feels like, you're able to track the sensation to understand, again, no matter what the food was, has my stomach organ taken in enough in this moment, or should I continue? And in the beginning, a lot of people don't understand that or don't know what that sensation feels like, but the training through this Breathe and Eat program helps you to sort of fine-tune, yes, I can take in more, and no, I think I'm completed. If you choose to go forward, at least you've taken the time to do so consciously, and that to me is the key, that we don't wake up at what I call in a food coma at the end of our meal or at the end of eating. We don't wake up in this food coma having inhaled the food and have no idea what happened to the food. So the mastication that you're talking about is important, but at times we're still so speedy we can't even pay attention to that. We have to go a little bit bigger, and to me it's to tune into the stomach organ a little bit more.
You know, it's funny as you say that. I remember my wife and I went to a restaurant. I won't mention the name of it. It's a national chain. and they have these just-to-die-for rolls. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, your meal's getting ready to come out. First thing they do is to bring rolls to the table with butter. And I mean, it's like these melt in your mouth. It's almost like a Krispy Kreme donut that comes hot off the line. I mean, it is just melting your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm from, of course, the state where Krispy Kreme was created, so I'm not a Dunkin' Donuts guy. I like that just melt away. Melts in your mouth onto your butt, I say. Mm-hmm. But we sat there, you know, and we seemed to enjoy it and eat it. And then, of course, our food came, and we felt compelled to eat the food because we'd ordered it. We got to pay for it and got home and felt sick. Mm-hmm. It was all of a sudden like, you know, this bread was unprocessed, uncooked something, and it just, the yeast was starting to explode in our stomachs,
right,
to the point where we were like, oh my God, how did we eat all of that? And frankly, it turned us off from going back to the restaurant, and certainly it turned us off from eating the bread. Obviously, there are times when we get tricked about how much we can eat because we see it, we eat it, as opposed to experiencing what is our stomach feeling as it's taking place?
Well, exactly. And as I mentioned, my scope of practice is more from the anatomical perspective, not necessarily, let's say, the food, the quality of food. But here's what happened. You had an experience, a physical experience, that it will now keep you possibly away from not only those rolls, but that restaurant. And what I'm trying to say is, that's exactly what I'm talking about in the extreme. So how can we pull this back a little bit tighter? One of the skills in the program is also about a match. If your body wants pizza, I say to people, have the pizza. Don't eat the whole pie, as we say in New York, but have a slice of the pizza because the body may want the fat. For example, if it's cold or you're tired or something like that, the body may want the fat, so take it in and see how it feels in the system to see if it was a match. And a lot of people can't figure out the match because we're not discerning yet from our body about what food feels good in the body. When I say feels good, Chuck, let me make that a little bit better. What food feels appropriate in the body and feels like it was the exact match that the body needed, not what your head was saying, but what the body needed. And let me say a little bit about the trick. I like how you use the word tricked. We're almost tricked by, you know, these rolls or the restaurant, however. But here's the thing. I'm also inviting people to take back the responsibility. And what I mean by responsibility is, this is your beautiful structure, your beautiful internal organs, your beautiful muscles and bones. You are the only one who understands how your particular body works. And you are the one who can take the charge and feel exactly what you need. And no one else has any right to say to you whether it's right or wrong. You are the one who knows. So I'm working to almost make people experts at their own bodies. And that's what keeps me so excited.
Well, I can see that. I really do. And I have to say this, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but, you know, when you look today at where we are, I'm 57, when you look today at where we are versus where I was when I was 7 years old, when I was seven, the majority of the meals that I ate were home-cooked meals prepared by, you know, my parents or my aunts and uncles or whatever, but people generally prepared meals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As compared to today, where most everything, I mean, you know, even macaroni and cheese is processed. It comes out of a Kraft box, and that's the experience that, you know, a lot of my grandkids have, thinking that that's what macaroni and cheese is supposed to taste like.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder today if the processed food industry hasn't fundamentally trained our tastes to consume their product versus us really sitting back and taking stock in ourselves and saying, well, no, that's not really what I want or what really is going to be healthy for me.
Well, let's bring it back around to the movement theme. And what I mean by that is, so back when we were younger, there was a lot more movement in our lives, I would guess.
Yes.
Right? We were
yes.
able to be outside more freely. We played outside. So the movement today of a younger generation is video games, everything on the TV. It's very said, there's not as much movement. Let's also look at movement with regards to the body then, of food back then and today. So the movement of food back then was, it was in the kitchen, it was mostly made at home, and that food moved through your body, for lack of a better word. Today, the food moves faster, but it may not move as fast through our body because of what could be the chemicals, the processed food, et cetera. So mm-hmm. I love to tie this all together with regards to movement and how much has shifted in terms of movement, that we're moving less and the food could possibly be moving slower through our bodies because of the quality of the food. And therefore, to me, the body is sicker in general on toxins and inactivity and all of these things that can sort of pile up over time and lead us to the feeling of disease or disconnect from the body. So, yes, I agree with you 100% about what was then and what is today. But the bottom line is we are living in this fast-paced world. How then do I help people connect with living in the pace that we are today, even if they have to eat on the road?
Well, living in the pace we are today is a fascinating topic, and my guest is Rochelle Rice. She is the author of Breathe and Eat, a 6-week mindful eating program. You can find this at breatheandeat.com, or if you want to know about Rochelle's movement program, go to rochellerice.com. She is the author of Real Fitness for Real Women, and is an educator on empowering women through movement. We'll be back with our last segment where we'll bring all of this back together in terms of specific actions and things that you can do to improve your health through movement, through breathing and mindful eating. My guest is Rochelle Rice. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Chuck Gallagher in our last segment with Straight Talk Radio, and today we have been talking about health. Rochelle Rice is my guest, and she embraces health at every size. After realizing that an inordinate amount of stress has been placed on thinness in our society rather than fitness, and I started the program by telling Rochelle that this is a bit unusual for me, and part of the reason that I wanted to connect at this point, because when I looked at folks in the National Speakers Association, my colleagues, I think of Rochelle and fitness. You have done a wonderful job with your brand, and Rochelle, you are passionate about that. You can find out more about Rochelle at rochellerice.com or breatheandeat.com. But I told Rochelle I was literally in the show laying flat on my back because of a herniated disc. And apparently I have to learn maybe compassion and also the impact that pain has. And at least for me on a personal level, the importance of movement and exercise and doing things to make sure that I am able to live the healthy life that I enjoy, not a life of pain. So fortunately, in a lying-prone position, I am not in pain, and we're able to do this interview. And Rochelle, I appreciate you taking the time to be on. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. We talked a little bit, Chuck, in the beginning about, you know, the grace and the ease, how I help people move with grace and ease. And generally with an injury like one like yourself today, people think they can't do anything. There's nothing, you know, the you've got a herniated disc, you have herniated discs, so therefore the sciatica in the left leg may not be working, but I imagine your right leg can still move a little bit.
Oh, then, hallelujah, thank goodness it can.
And then whichever arm you may have free that's not working during this interview, that can move as well. And so what I try to really work with people in empowering them through movement is to help them see that and feel that there are still parts of the body that can move with grace and ease and move around the injury so that we can still maintain a sense of there's a circulation in the body, there's a tingling sensation. It helps keep the blues away and helps also motivate you to say, okay, I'm not completely down. There's part of me that can still move. So my job is to really help people, even in the face of adversity or an injury, that all is not lost. This is an incredible body that you live in. And especially you, Chuck, who is comfortable in your own skin, can then continue to keep up that positive outlook and attitude and move those parts of the body that can still work.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And Rochelle, I've noted in especially some of the really cool videos that you have on your site that obviously in working to empower women, although you have a background in dance, and I would say have a fairly thin body, the reality is, you know, I think you've said this well, we all have our own body size and body style, and to embrace who we are with where we are to be able to do something, because that really is significant in terms of how we think about ourselves. And what do you find whenever you're working with a group of women who are, as I think you put it, plus-sized, mm-hmm. what do you find are the challenges that these ladies have to moving and to embracing the ability that they have to better health?
The work that I do, Chuck, is from this whole anatomical perspective, just like we had tied it in with the breathe and eat. The fuller body needs to be looked at differently just in terms of how do we accommodate larger breast size, how does the pelvis working with abdominal, maybe some extra abdominal size, how do larger thighs work differently? And so one of the focus is how, to, and again, this works with anyone. This is my particular area of expertise is the fuller body, is how can I move that body, as you said, with grace and ease, working to strengthen and lengthen the muscles that might be affected in this moment by her size. So when you talk about my size and people ever say, you know, did the women say anything to you? They may, but the fact that I can take it to an anatomical conversation. So, for example, there needs to be more inner thigh work to help the knees on this body, or there needs to be more back stretching to help the lower back for this body. Then the whole focus shifts to, again, back to her body and the woman taking full charge of her ability and her confidence to move her body safely and effectively.
You know, that makes a whole lot of sense. Do you find, I'm not sure how to ask this question, so if it comes out wrong, then help me. But do you find that fuller plus size people, I know you work with women, but fuller plus size people versus men or women, doesn't make a difference. Do they fully embrace wanting to do something, or is the media convinced them that, oh my gosh, you are fuller plus size, therefore you don't fit what the expectation is, and it's a hopeless kind of feeling? I hope that question makes sense.
Absolutely. There's a couple of things that come up. One is what I fight for passionately is the discrimination that exists within our whole culture. The discrimination against fuller bodies, the weight stigma, the weight bias, and this is something that I stand for and really fight passionately about, that we have no right to discriminate against anyone because we have no idea what's gone on in their world. Some people I've worked with have been in a car accident, which has prohibited them from movement. And so therefore, the body may shift and change. So, but we see them and we make an assumption or we discriminate against immediately just based on their physical size without knowing anything about them. I have mm-hmm. had challenges with childbirth, and therefore things are off in their system. Maybe it's on a neurological level. We discriminate immediately against them, not even understanding who's standing in front of us. There's that. And then one of the other things is that you've talked about in your blog post about Jennifer Gardner is that the physical perfection, it is an illusion. We're not seeing what is real out there. There's been some women who have been bold, like a Helen Mirren, for example, and say and show her body, not photoshopped. Or we're seeing some of that, but for the most part, we're not seeing that. And as you talk about to me, good ethics are grounded in the heart. And when it comes to ethics and body image, we are not seeing this in the media, in the fitness industry, in many of the industries across the country.
So, Rochelle, I understand completely what you say. And, you know, I have to admit, I've been judgmental myself. You know, I've rushed through airports and been frustrated by people moving kind of slow and thinking to myself, why don't you just pick up the pace? I mean, walk it. You don't have to muddle through the airport. And today, if I were walking through an airport, I would be muddling through the airport, moving pretty slow myself. So I guess as we sit back and we look at what we think about, what we expect, and perhaps what the media puts out, there are times that it's quick. Let's put it this way. I'll put it in my world. I'm quick to judge, and the experience that I'm having now is helping me be more compassionate. And I like the word mindful of what is the experience the other person is having, as opposed to judging and assuming that everyone should have that same experience. And I applaud you for the work that you do, because you help keep us grounded in realizing that we really are all the same.
Well, I appreciate that, Chuck, and I especially appreciate the opportunity to speak with some of my colleagues around the topic. If I could bring it even into your world about ethics, I ask us all as a society, is it ethical for us to pass judgment on one another, or is it more ethical for us to look at, again, what brings us all together? And that's the part that I hold so near and dear to my heart, is that we are beautiful, again, human beings that have more in common than we have not in common. And if we could just begin to focus more on that from a very high ethical perspective, I would feel like my work is making a difference in the world.
Well, I think your work does make a difference in the world. And I think you all are so right. It is a choice of ethics in terms of what we look at, how we see each other, and the commonality that we have. Rochelle Rice is my guest. She has a website, Breathe and Eat, as well as RochelleRice.com. And I really would encourage you to go to Breathe and Eat and look at her 6-week mindful eating program. Between movement and mindful eating, Rochelle, I think you helped bring the world to a better place to keep us aware of what is common and what binds us together, not what pulls us apart. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And again, if you have interest in movement, in the movement of your body and how you might be able to improve your health, visit RochelleRice.com. There's contact information there. She is a wonderful resource and has written a great book that you might want to pick up a copy of for yourself. Straight Talk Radio always talks about those items that are important to you, to your world, and what makes a difference. And as we close this week's segment, remember, this is Chuck Gallagher, and every choice we make has a consequence. Till next week, Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.